Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions. With me, Yudalee Wickham-Ashby. And today, I'm deeply honored to have in the studio with me, Mr. Graham Vaughan, a well-known personality in Barbados, and a story that he's willing to share with us. Welcome to Visions, Graham.
Thank you very much, Yudalee. I never get used to that. A well-known personality in Barbados, really?
Well, you are well-known. And well-loved, I must add.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So, Graham, let us learn a little about you. Where did you grow up in Barbados? And what was your youth like?
I started the journey in Union Hall, St. Philip, up to about 6 years. And then my family moved to Durrance in Christchurch. And I have to say that my youth was not a very hyperactive one. I didn't spend hours out on the pasture and such like. I spent a lot of time at home working on computers. Still have a love for computers and technology to this day, and reading and doing a lot more indoor things than I per se would have liked. But you know, things go a certain way. God has a certain plan for your life and directs things a certain way because he wants certain things to come out. And I have to say that I look back with few regrets. I'm grateful and thankful to God that he led me in the direction that he did.
Okay, so that is good to learn, Graham. So tell us now, how did you move into broadcasting journalism?
Well, that is entirely the responsibility of one Mr. Anthony Green. I was attending the same church as Anthony at the time, Sanctuary. This is before it was Sanctuary in Portman. This was Sanctuary New Testament. And we were based in Foundation School. One day after church, I was discussing with he and another member, you know, talking about coming up and growing up, and hearing people like Maurice Norville and Patrick Gallop on the radio, and Balky Roach, and, you know, well, Balky wasn't on radio, but you heard these names.
Yes.
And what they did was so inspiring. You tuned in, not just for the information, but for the character, the personality of these people that engaged you, that drew you in, that made you become something that you didn't know about. I did not even know at the time that there was a gospel station in Barbados. It was Gospel 790 AM at the time. Mm-hmm. And I spoke about it and said, you know, when I was small, I used to think, you know, that would be cool to get into. And Anthony's response to this day still blows me away. Anthony went, yes, I used to be there. You should apply. You will be so great there. I mean, he got, I don't know if you know Anthony, but it takes a lot to get Anthony excited. That was one of the times I saw Anthony excited. You know, I'm usually a procrastinator. I'm somebody who takes a little while to move on things, but he was so engaged and excited. And I don't know if he spoke to anybody at Starcom Network then to say, well, look, you know, this guy is coming in, you should give him a listen. But between he putting the idea in my mind to write, and then God greasing the wheels when I came in, Ronnie Clark is the person who set me up to do my audition. And back then you had to record one time to a CD. I did my CD and took it to whoever it was supposed to do. You know, I was waiting to see if I got a call back. And I did get a call back about 2 or 3 weeks later to tell me that they had lost my CD and they wanted me to come back. To come back and redo the audition, which to this day, I think my second audition was far, it really paled in
comparison to the
first one. But I was told later by Ronnie that he had taken it to Mr. Gallup, was still working at Starcom Network at the time. He took it to Mr. Gallup and Mr. Gallup reviewed it and was interested, and then they somehow lost it. But when I went and redid it, they said, you know, it was nice. I was still teaching at Dighton Griffith at the time, but I got a call back and I started rushing from Dighton Griffith straight down to Starcom on evenings and training. And I started around April 2005. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So wonderful. That's how that chapter began.
Nice, wonderful. So, would you say that you love both jobs, teaching and preaching, broadcasting?
It's really hilarious that you say that, Yudeli, because you use the term preaching. Mm-hmm. And I think of myself as a teacher, even when I'm on radio.
Yes.
You will often hear me share something that I just learned or something that God showed me, and I want to pass it on to you. I want other people to know this, because if it opened my mind as much as it did to who God is and more revelation of Him, then I want to pass that on. So I'm kind of always a teacher no matter what I'm doing. But then I am also always a preacher. And the interesting thing about that word is there's a version of the Bible that I currently use as my primary version. It's called TS 2009, the Scriptures 2009. And the purpose of it was to literally translate the Hebrew and Greek into English. So they did not try to do a lot of figuring out what the meaning was. They did, but the main thing was to say, this is how the Hebrews thought when you said this. This is what the Hebrews saw, and this is therefore what we want to say in English. And the reason I find your use of preaching so interesting is because Revelations 12:11 is one of my favorite verses. And they overcame him in part. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, the word of their testimony. And the word used in that translation is preaching. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their preaching. And it really revealed to me that we talk about preaching in terms of standing on a pulpit and giving an exegesis of the word of God. Preaching is your testimony.
Yes, it is.
When you talk about Jesus and what he's done in your life, you're preaching. That's a preacher. So anybody can be a preacher talking about, this is what the Lord has done for me. In fact, one of the first preachers was the woman at the well, who went into the town and said, come see a man who told me all I've ever done. He knows me. Come and see. That was the first preacher. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And therefore, I find it very interesting that you use that. But I don't see a distinction, to answer your question. I don't see a distinction between the two.
Okay.
You know that I am known as the encourager.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all bound up in that. I am a teacher. I'm a preacher. I am an announcer. I am the encourager. And it's all about making people aware that God and Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit are not just real, but they are really passionate about you.
Right.
Everything that is about you.
Mm-hmm. So, Graham, let's fast forward a bit, because you had a relatively regular life, you know, just growing up in St. Philip, going off to school, continuing your education, getting into work, and then getting married.
Yeah.
So, let's look at 2018, after you were on the gospel station and just enjoying life, as you would say. Then you had a motorcycle accident, which left you critically ill. Share a little about that experience and your recovery.
All right. There really is no way to share a little of it to understand the impact this event has had on my life. Mm-hmm. And I don't call it the accident, I call it the incident, because mm-hmm. it is very clear now in hindsight that this was planned in the heavenlies. I didn't plan it, but God planned it, and God put a lot of things in place, not from my lifetime, but from my parents' lifetimes, that has come into play to help me in my recovery now. So that would tell you how far back God was putting things in place to make sure that this journey went the way that he wanted it to. But July 12, 2018, which happens to be my stepdaughter's birthday, I went to church. And here's the interesting thing about it. You would kind of say, okay, this happened because this person was doing this or that or the next. No, I was at church. I went to church to rehearse for a play that my group at church was putting on that Sunday. And my wife followed me there, and she was very tired from work. And I told her, go on home. And she took the car and she left. And I told her, go on home, I'll just follow. Otherwise, she would have been behind me and a direct witness to what happened. But God gave, you know, in his wisdom, said, send her home. And I closed up the church. I took the keys to the elder that looks after the church keys. He started asking me questions about the bike, how powerful it was and how fast it could go, how fast I had gone on it and thing. And he said, we got to talk about this sometime. I said, yeah, man, I love talking about the bike. And I left him. I remember he lives in Belleville. I made the decision in my head. Am I going to go Kalmarock or am I going to go Government Hill? Because Kalmarock was not yet repaired at the time. They repaired it shortly after the incident. But I remember choosing Government Hill because they said it's smoother. And I'm just going to go up to the highway and it's going to be a straight cruise home. And I headed up Government Hill and the rest basically is history. A gentleman was waiting by Powell's and Ivy to turn across to go to BCC to pick up his girlfriend. And he confused the bike's lights with a car that was behind me, further behind me. So he thought he had more space. And he turned. I slammed into the side of the car. Interestingly enough, let me just give you a little piece of what I mean when I say God planned all of this. He, when this happened, got out and called his girlfriend, who was at community college. He was going to collect her, as I said. And she ran down. And as she got closer to the accident scene, these are the words I heard went through her mind. I heard later on that went through her mind. Wait, that looks like Graham's jacket. Isn't that strange, Udalee, that this person coming from BCC would actually be able to say, wait, hold on. I think I know this particular person. And she did know me. And she knows my family. And therefore, she was able to pick up the phone when she realized it was me, call my aunt, who then got in touch with my parents. And a lot of these accidents, when they happen at night, the police have got to come and try to call people and find, you know, who is this person? Find some sort of ID, contact their family, and let them know they've gone to hospital. God worked it so that the call came in just after my wife had gotten home. And she and my parents were able to reach the accident scene just after the ambulance. And the ambulance came very quickly as well. So all of this really indicates to me that this was not a random thing in terms of the way we think of coincidence. God set this up, right?
Right.
And recovery, I had 8 fractures in my body, 7 that we knew about, and I found out about the 8th months later because it was in my hand and nobody knew about it. The only way I knew about it was because my left hand was difficult to open and close. And then when I looked at it, I realized my left ring finger is now about a millimeter shorter than my right. All the other fingers match it. That one doesn't. And on examination, we realized from the x-ray, yes, there was a break in there. So that carried the tally to 8. But I broke both bones in my right forearm. I broke my left humerus, which is just under my shoulder on the left side. I broke the neck of femur, which is the part of the femur, my thigh bone, that goes into the hip. And I broke it mid-thigh. And then my kneecap was broken and my ankle, my talus. So I was in tremendous pain. There was no place I could go, no place I could roll. No, there was no comfortable place. And I'm told that I screamed. The accident happened about 9:30, going up to 10 the night. I screamed straight till about 5 a.m. until the drugs, whatever cocktail they gave me, finally kicked in and started to mute it. And since then, it has been quite a journey. I want to say thank you to Dr. Paul Adams, who did that first set of surgeries that saved my life. If I had to wait for a long time, the trauma would probably have done me in. But I was able to get the surgeries through him privately. The Sunday after, that was a Thursday, the Sunday, he went in and did massive set of surgeries for about 8 hours. And as I said, saved my life. I had to go back then for another surgery the week after. And since then, I had reconstructive surgery in England. I will say this, my recovery is not just physical, it's mental, emotional, and very much spiritual. One of the things that God does, the word says that he redeems the times. And God said, there's no way I'm going to leave you to be able to say, you know, July 12th is a cursed day or anything like that. And therefore, exactly 1 year after the accident, my nephew, Zach, was born on July 12th, 2019.
Okay. So you talked about the accident and your medical surgeries and so on, and the damage that was done to your body. What I find very challenging for most people is the emotional recovery, the mental recovery, in terms of not blaming people for an accident that may have caused the measure of impairment, or even if it was a personal incident that took place where you created the situation for the damage to happen. You know, no blame. How would you say you manage to avoid blaming anyone or even yourself?
I think what was probably most important in that aspect of things has been the recognition that, as I said, this was not something artificial. This was something that was put in place by the will of God. So many things have reflected that. It really made me, from the word go, from the beginning, say, well, God, this was on you. And then because of the way that he refocused me on his love, his passion for me, and the things that, as I said, I have learned that have aided my spiritual growth. Because, I mean, when you're constrained to a bed, you have nothing but time. And even trying to do therapy, even with trying to, you know, those things and breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and, you know, watch a movie or whatever, there is a lot of time. And my thoughts and reading the word, one of the first things he pointed me to was the story of the prodigal son. I'm not going to get into everything that I discovered from that story, but I will just encourage everybody to go and look at the story of the prodigal son again, but this time pay very close attention to the attitude of the father, because the reason for telling the story, Jesus wanted to show us what our heavenly father is like. And I would encourage you as well, not just to read it for yourself, but there's a gentleman on YouTube called Brandon Robbins, and he has a very, very good breakdown of what that story would have meant in first century Jerusalem to the people who were there and who heard it. There are things that we miss because of the distance between us and that time and the culture. And you really owe it to yourself to look at that, because it really shows you some things you may not have known about God before. But because he pointed me in that direction, because he showed me certain things about himself and the way that he is involved in my life, it didn't become a case of blame. That's why I said it's not an accident, it's an incident. It's a part of my life story that God deliberately put there because he cares about me. I know that may sound strange. A massive accident that puts you in bed for months, you know, that's because God cared about me. Yes. Because there were things in my life that were not the way he wanted them to be. And also, you know, besides the fact that I was off course, then there was the fact that this was used by him to bring me closer to him, to show me more of him, to develop our relationship. And if by now you can't tell that I'm a Christian, I don't know, you may have been listening to the wrong interview, but I am definitely a Christian, and God is 100% a massive part of everything in my life. And that is what prevented me from putting the blame on this person or that person, or even the gentleman and his girlfriend came and visited me. He was in a lot of pain about it. He blamed himself. And I was able to say, no, don't do that. I forgive you. This was not your doing per se. Yes, you may have been part of it, but you didn't set it up. You didn't intend anything. And I'm recognizing now that this was of benefit to me. And I forgave him and hugged him. And I'm hoping, because we haven't spoken much since, but I'm hoping that he has let that go and moved on.
I hope so too, because I think this is one of the concerns that many persons have in terms of the other individual and what they too go through. So, Graham, I know our time will soon be catching up, and we definitely will need to do a part two, because I not have deliberately not asked about your family, because I want that to be a separate discussion. What was the rehabilitation process like for you? You would have started out here in Barbados and then on to another country. What was the rehab like for you?
You've heard the term blood, sweat, and tears.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason there wasn't that much blood was because the bandaging was well done, the dressing was well done. But sweat and tears were there. And I have a lot of videos on my phone saved or in the cloud of me every now and then. Google Photos does this memory thing. And this morning's memory, which means it was like 5 years ago today, this morning's memory was of me sitting down, and my hand is on what we called the patient lift. I'm using that to support my right elbow, and it took me literally between 5 and 10 seconds to sit down. And when I finally did drop that last 5 centimeters or something, you know, there's this involuntary, and I rolled over off of my hip, you know, and then had to roll back upright. And what can I say? It is something that I think everybody who has had physical trauma knows in their recovery. And it is very much emotional as well as physical. Please understand that disability is not just physical. It impacts you emotionally. It impacts you mentally, the way you think about things, not just emotional and how you feel, you know, I get angry or something, but the way you think about things. Some people develop paranoia. Some people develop all kinds of different things. My surgeon in the UK, Mr. Yasser Jabbar, I was trying to get hold of him, and about 2 weeks after I was trying to get hold of him, his secretary reaches out to me to say he's been in his own motorcycle accident. So my surgeon and I have that in common, and he is not disabled to the extent that I am, but he did have a broken left ankle. My right was broken, his left was broken, and we have commiserated several times, you know, over the changes in life and the way it has affected him. And he's a world-renowned surgeon, you understand? It really does affect everybody, and there's no way to avoid it.
Well, Graham, the clock on the wall says it's time to wrap up. And I will invite you to continue this conversation, because the discussion around how people think, that whole thinking pattern, your speech pattern, your language, and everything changes. And I think we need to also have some more conversations around this aspect of disability. And I also want to learn how your family adjusted and how they have been walking with you. But thank you very much for coming on today.
It was a pleasure, Yudeli.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby, and my very special guest, Graham Vaughan. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1246-269-9660 or 1264307300, and you can email me visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can go on the VOB92.9.com website and look for Visions Podcast. So until next week, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Ciao.